Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, my favorite news story of the week, not including Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s story of picking up a dead bear and sitting in Brooklyn and then going back to drop the bear off in Central Park before he went to the airport, Kennedy Airport, which is in the other direction from where he was eating dinner in Brooklyn. There are parks in Brooklyn where you could drop off a dead bear. Anyway, my favorite news story of the week concerns a story Donald Trump told during his much ballyhooed by him news conference this week. It was a story about him being in a helicopter with California then Assembly Speaker Willie Brown and a near accident that they experienced together, much like the Brian Williams near accident in his helicopter. And it turns out Willie Brown, still alive, says, "That never happened. I was never in a helicopter with Donald Trump." And a lot of news agencies scampered around to try to figure out what was, if anything, the truth behind that story. And at the end of the week, a revelation. A nonagenarian, former city council member in Los Angeles, Nate Holden, said, "Well, I was in a helicopter with Donald Trump once in the early 90s, I believe." What did Nate Holden and Willie Brown have in common? They're both black. Willie is a short black man. Nate Holden is a tall black man. But to be fair, in a helicopter, probably either one of them would be sitting down. Hello, welcome to the show.
I live for the sun because it makes fun. Pretty girls with their guys, such a love you can't buy. And they all live for the sun. Go sun, 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 sun.
From Santa Monica, California, home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Just a note, that wasn't the Sun Rays. That was a cover by my friend, the late, brilliantly talented Jeffrey Foskett. Just wanted to give a hat tip to him, wherever he may be. And now,
looks like muscular.
Astronomers and other stargazers have new cause for concern about light pollution. This follows a claim that Starlink's latest satellites, which support phone services, may appear 5 times brighter in the sky than existing ones. Starlink, of course, owned by Elon Musk. Recently published study by the International Astronomical Union asserts that direct-to-cell DTC satellites being put up aloft by SpaceX for its satellite business average 4.9 times brighter than earlier Starlink spacecraft. In a best-case scenario, where brightness mitigation techniques are employed, who knew they had those? The report estimates that DTC satellites will still be about 2.6 times brighter than the others, based upon the lower altitudes that they operate at. Whose idea was that? Research is authored by IAU's Center for the Protection of Dark and Quiet Skies from Satellite Constellation Interference, simply known as CPS. No comment yet from the always commenting Elon. We'll await further developments. Next, let's visit the world of artificial intelligence, better known as AI. There's a company called Humane. I know. And it released a $699 item called an AI pin back in April, according to The Verge. Shortly after it released the pin, returns started flowing in. Between May and August, more AI pins were returned than purchased, according to internal sales data. By June, only about 8,000 units hadn't been returned, according to a source with direct knowledge of the data. As of right about now, the number of units still in customer hands had fallen closer to 7,000. At launch, the AI pin was met with overwhelmingly negative reviews. David Pierce of The Verge said it just doesn't work. Marcus Brownlee called it the worst product he's ever reviewed. Now, Humane is attempting to stabilize its operations and maintain confidence among staff and possible acquirers. Wouldn't you want to buy a company like that? The New York Times reported in June that Hewlett-Packard is considering purchasing the company. The information reported last week that Humane is negotiating with current investors to raise some debt. The AI pin and accessories have brought in just $9 million in lifetime sales, but around 1,000 purchases were canceled before shipping, and more than $1 million worth of product has been returned. These figures paint a picture of the difficult position Humane finds itself in, with a limited set of options on a path forward. The low sales figures pale in comparison to the over $200 million that Humane has raised from notable Silicon Valley executives since it started up. Those executives include Sam Altman of OpenAI and Mark Benioff of Salesforce. Up to now, about 10,000 pins and accessories have shipped in total. Humane had hoped to ship about 100,000 of the items within the first year. That was first reported by the New York Times. A spokesman for Humane says there are inaccuracies in this reporting, including the financial data. When pressed about the specifics of those inaccuracies, the spokesman said, quote, "We have nothing else to provide as we do not comment on financial data and will refer it to our legal counsel," unquote. Once a Humane pin is returned, the company has no way to refurbish it. Sources with knowledge of the return process confirmed the pin becomes e-waste. Humane doesn't have the opportunity to reclaim the revenue by selling it again. The core issue is that there is a T-Mobile limitation that makes it impossible for now to Humane to reassign a pin to a new user once it's been assigned to someone. One source said they don't believe Humane has disposed of the old pins because, quote, they're still hopeful they can solve this problem eventually. T-Mobile had no comment. Quote, we knew we were at the starting line, not the finish line, when the AI pin launched, said the spokeswoman. She said Humane has released several software updates to, quote, address user feedback, unquote. And there's been some serious turnover in Humane's executive suite in recent months. Humane's director of customer experience, I wish I had one of those, disappeared from the company's internal Slack last week, according to sources. She didn't respond to requests for comment. The company also kind of had some turnover in its engineering leadership. Vice President of Engineering, who joined Humane while it was still building in secrets, the former Chief Technical Officer and the head of Project Engineering, all left Humane with little explanation for their staff. This is an AI thing. In January, the company laid off 4% of employees as a cost-cutting measure ahead of the pin's launch. The leadership of the company appears, according to The Verge, to have ignored some warning signs about the product until well into development. The president and co-founder of the company debuted the product to significant buzz when he demoed it on stage during a TED talk last year. The quote about the product at that time was, quote, step into the future with Humane AI Pin, featuring innovative voice control, laser ink display, and AI-enhanced personal assistant. The CEO and his wife both previously worked at Apple, where they claimed involvement in developing the Macintosh iPod, Apple Watch, and iPhone. On the day the bad review started to emerge, the CEO posted on X, quote, this is the starting point. No Gen 1 is perfect, nor is it ever the complete vision, unquote. Humane's leadership appears to have ignored warning signs that the bad reviews were coming. A small group of testers, which included the co-founder's parents and friends, several investors and employees received pins prior to the public launch, and many voiced concerns about the product. One early tester contacted customer support to describe the product as disorienting and frustrating, and described the many ways the product failed to replicate abilities that were shown in demo videos. A source said the early feedback, quote, ripped through the company like a bullet, unquote. They launched the AI pin anyway, because it's AI. A brighter view of the technology and its potential comes from France, where for the last month, a huge data center used to train AI has turned its hot air waste into water, piping it to a local energy system run by a French utility. Running at full capacity, it is expected to export 6.6 thermal megawatts of heat out of the building, the equivalent of more than 1,000 homes. Right now, it's being used to heat the pool at the Olympics. Not the river, just the pool. Running at full capacity, the American data center company Equinix expects to export 6.6 thermal megawatts of heat out of its data center building. That's the equivalent of more than 1,000 homes. Projections suggest that AI is about to turbocharge the amount of electricity that data centers need, along with crypto data mining centers They're among the biggest consumers of electricity. Equinix predicts power consumption for AI per rack could rise by as much as 400%. And so European officials at least are attempting to mitigate the environmental impact of the coming AI energy crunch and transform data centers in part of the infrastructure, keeping cities warm. It's described as a win-win situation for both Equinix and the local suburb of Paris, Saint-Denis. Equinix can pipe the heat out of the building so the cooling devices in the building don't have to work so hard, and the city gets a cheap source of heat produced locally. The project received a $2.1 million investment from the city of Paris. Equinix is committed to providing the energy free of charge for 15 years. The mayor of the town says using the data center as an energy source will spare the region 1,800 tons of CO2 emissions every year. But as you may know, France relies heavily on nuclear power for its electricity, and critics say multiplying heat reuse projects, like the one that's being discussed right now, are a distraction from the real issue, the amount of land, water, and electricity being consumed increasingly by data centers. Where do the data centers get their power? Equinix says its energy demands at the location in Paris are 100% covered, their word, by renewable energy sources. That includes using power purchase agreements, your PPAs, where tech companies pay wind or solar farms for the equivalent power they produce, even if that power is not directly connected to the data center. So it's basically a money exchange. And now,
he's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The New York State Inspector General, Lucy Lang, Tom?
Lucy Lang.
Yeah, actually right. Right on the money. Issued a report this week titled The Review of the First 2 Years of HALT, H-A-L-T, at the New York State Department of Corrections, revealing widespread violations of the Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act. For some reason, that's spelled out as HALT. This from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. The report highlights the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision's systematic failure to adhere to the law's requirements, including exceeding the 15-day cap on solitary confinement and neglecting to conduct mandatory evidentiary hearings. The HALT Act, effective for now a couple of years, was designed to limit the use of solitary confinement in New York State prisons, capping it at 15 consecutive days, and requiring therapeutic and rehabilitative alternatives. But the report found that the department frequently violated these provisions, insufficient documentation, and failure to provide necessary out-of-cell time for inmates. Inspector General Lang emphasized that the department's outdated paper-based record-keeping hindered oversight and compliance with the law, recommending a transition to, you guessed it, electronic records for better transparency and monitoring, unless the power goes out. Ongoing issues with Boeing's Starliner spaceship have been front and center this summer. A new government report highlights other shortcomings of the company's aerospace work. The report, issued this week by NASA's Office of Inspector General, calls into question Boeing's standards and quality control for its part in NASA's efforts to return astronauts to the moon. This can only benefit Elon Musk. In NASA's development of its new generation mega rocket, the Space Launch System, it gave Boeing the contract to build the rocket system's powerful upper stage. According to the IG report, Boeing's quality control systems fall short of NASA's requirements. Some known deficiencies have gone unaddressed. What's more, the workers on the project are not as a whole sufficiently experienced or well-trained, according to the IG, reported by NBC. The report brings additional scrutiny to Boeing. It's already dealing with problems plaguing the first crewed flight, that is to say, a flight with crew aboard, not crudely made, or maybe it is, of its Starliner capsule. That mission was meant to be the final step before Boeing could begin routine flights to the International Space Station. A helium leak and issues with the Starliner's thrusters have left the two NASA astronauts who flew the capsule into the space station stuck in orbit for more than 2 months. The journey was meant to last just 8 days. Of course, Boeing has problems with its planes, too. There was the 737 MAX, on which a door panel blew out earlier this year. Now the report from NASA's Inspector General's finding that the second stage of the space launch system, the part Boeing is responsible for, is significantly over budget. Hey, so is the Olympics. It blew through an original estimate of $962 million a couple years ago. The projected price tag for the work through next year is now $2.8 billion. The project is also years behind schedule. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, they're doing fine. Regarding Boeing's quality control practices, the IG said from 2021 to 2023, federal oversight officers issued 71 requests to address, quote, deficiencies in quality, unquote. Many of the requests, I'm sad to tell you, took aim at Boeing's work at NASA's Michoud Assembly Facility just east of New Orleans. Quote, quality control issues in Michoud are largely due to the lack of a sufficient number of trained and experienced aerospace workers at Boeing, according to the report. News of Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Oh, and one more item of Musk love. Tesla has issued a recall in China for 4 of its electric vehicle models. That's involving more than 1.5 million cars, according to the Register. The defect impacts Model 3, S, X, and Y cars. It involves the locking mechanism for the hood, according to Chinese officials. Affected cars might not be able to detect when the hood is unlocked. Ordinarily, a driver would get a notification about the hood being unlocked, but the defect prevents that. In a worst-case scenario, drivers might only discover the hood is unlocked while driving. The scope of recalls for Tesla cars still pales in comparison to those for the Cybertruck, also a brainwave of Elon's. The Cybertruck has been recalled 3 times since its launch last November, once for acceleration pedals getting stuck, a second for detaching trims, and again for failing windshield wipers. Every single Cybertruck made before this past May has been recalled at least 1 time. Now, news of the godly. And our child abuse spotlight this week points to Bolivia. Bolivia's top prosecutor's office said this week it's launching an investigation against 3 Jesuit priests accused of covering up child abuse in the city of La Paz. This is the latest development in a string, according to Reuters, of pedophilia scandals. I guess string is the collective noun for pedophilia scandals that have shaken the South American country. The investigation is targeting priests who may have helped cover up the rape of a young boy in an education facility way back in 1961. The perpetrator is supposedly Archbishop of La Paz, Alejandro Mestre Descalz, according to the prosecutor's office. which said Mestre had raped the child on at least two occasions. So he liked it. In a statement, Bolivia's attorney general named three priests accused of keeping silent for decades despite knowledge that a crime had taken place. His office had requested their house arrest. The investigation follows another incident involving a Spanish priest, Luis Maria Roma, who targeted at least 100 minors from indigenous communities in the Bolivian city of Charagua between 1994 and 2005. He was working as a missionary. He later recorded acts in his personal diary that were made public. Who does that? I mean, yeah. Despite church authorities being informed, no measures were ever taken against Roma. He died in 2019 without ever facing prosecution. But his diary is available. News of the Godly, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. From Santa Monica, this is Le Show, and now... Direct from the virtual trading floor of Corium Slocum Oliver, this is Mind Your Own Business. I'm Mike Tuccinello, on the virtual trading floor. The stock market took a dip this week, and the water was anything but fine. The recovery in the following days was a brisk drying off, but the savvy investor was still unsure if it was a real rebound or a dead cat bounce. and bystanders could only wonder about the ultimate effect on Mr. and Mrs. Pocketbook. It was only 3 decades ago that drug companies were allowed to advertise directly to the public. By now, pharmaceutical ads are as common as disease itself, spurring a burgeoning of a specialized business. Sylvia Meal Argent reports from the Money Honey Desk.
Mike, ever since acetyl salicylic acid was renamed aspirin for public consumption, drug names have been a growth industry, and doing much of that growing has been Casper Conway, creative director of Factory Pharma, the nation's largest source of new drug names. And he's with us today. Casper, welcome.
Thanks, Sylvia. It's a pleasure, Eva. That's my word for pleasure.
It's like you can't stop from doing that.
Yes, that's kind of my superpower.
So, tell us the secret behind the magic.
Well, a manufacturer comes to us with a new preparation. Let's call it acetaminonab or something unpronounceable like that. And they say, Casper, do your thing. And my first, sometimes only question is, what does this drug do? What's its function, medically speaking? Of course, its function, actually speaking, is to make the firm in question a lot of money, but that's another matter. So, let's say its function is to handle heart disease. So, I think cardiology, cardio, cardio-love, cardiolova. Sometimes it's that easy. Sometimes I have to work a little harder, let's say, to handle skin disturbances. Skin has cuticles, cutilia, or it's epidermis, so epidra.
So it's all about word association?
Sometimes. Sometimes it's about a feeling you want to engender. Mm. Maybe it's an arthritis drug, and you want to suggest the way you want the patient to feel. So, relievia. Or even more aspirationally, ecstasium, you know, for ecstasy.
Got it. I noticed that the names tend to have certain kinds of endings.
Oh, yes. A feminine ending, an Eva or Ova, usually says about a third more than an Evium or an Ovium. I don't really know why, but the numbers don't lie. Or at least they don't lie to me.
Casper, how did you develop this talent? Is it something you studied?
Oh, not really, Sylvia. It's more of a gift empic. Something I just discovered shortly after I dropped out of med school.
And Factory Pharma gets a percentage payment on each pill sold?
Sometimes. More usually, we're on what the lawyers would call a retainer. So we do okay regardless of whether the pill catches on or not. We had a pain reliever we did called Olympic. And it was doing great until the International Olympic Committee threatened to sue our ass off. But you just carry on. The great thing is, there's always more drugs.
Spoken like a different kind of addict. Casper, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Via.
And for now, that's all for Mind Your Own Business. I'm Mike Tuccinello saying this week, mind the business of someone you love. So long.
Things were getting depressing, hard to shake free of our cares. Couldn't buy my car on credit, baby was selling her shares.
Oh, baby.
Guys in suits were on my TV meeting just to say they'd met. Then just when it seemed the darkest, here comes the best news yet. They were doing a dead cat bounce, just watching the big bulls pounce. When only one day counts, that's when you do the dead cat bounce. You know, 2 days later we were sliding right back into the hole. Red arrows pointed downward, warnings blacker than coal.
Oh, baby.
Baby was pruning her Christmas list. eBay had my guitar. Sure didn't feel like dancing till we heard this noise from afar. They were doing the dead cat bounce, Stocks rise at obscene amounts. Only in my dream account
could we do the
dead cat bounce. One day wonders and shooting stars, instant karma and mini bars. Now it's here, now it's gone. Only thing growing is my neighbor's lawn. Well, now I'm scuffling for groceries. Baby's hooking for rent. The checks they say were in the mail, but the mail was never sent. You can bounce a dead cat forever, but it's only gonna go up once. Everybody's a genius. Tell everybody's a dunce. They were doing the dead cat bounce, sipping deep from fantasy spouts. They were buying hope by the ounce. They were doing the dead cat bounce. Let's all do the dead cat bounce. Sad reality, we'll all trounce. Even while the misery mounts,
we'll be doing the
dead cat. The dead cat. The dead cat bounce.
Uh-oh. Sounds like crypto winter. A judge has approved a $12.7 billion settlement between FTX, Alameda Research, which is affiliated with FTX, or was, and a little government agency called the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. That's according to a court filing this week. Defunct crypto exchange FTX and Alameda, its associated trading firm, previously agreed on the settlement figure with the CFTC last month after months of negotiations pending the approval of the judge. It ends the lawsuit the CFTC lodged against the exchange. Former CEO Sam Bankman-Fried and Alameda a couple of years ago alleging their fraud cost customers some $8 billion. The agency initially pushed for a $52 billion settlement. FTX is going to pay all of the up to $12.7 billion to creditors, subject to available funds. Where would those be? It's required to pay $8.7 billion in restitution to those who suffered losses due to their violations, FTX's, of the Commodity Exchange Act. An additional $4 billion in disgorgement is mandated for gains obtained via the violations. Beyond the settlement agreements, the FTX defendants and associated parties are permanently prohibited from engaging directly or indirectly in trading, transactions involving commodity interests, and related activities. This includes a prohibition engaging on any digital asset commodities, such as your Bitcoin, Ether, or your USDT, for their own account or for any account in which they have a direct or indirect interest. FTX and Alameda must fully cooperate with the CFTC in any related investigations or proceedings, including providing necessary documents and testimony. Bankman-Fried, you may recall, was found guilty last November of 7 criminal counts, sentenced to 25 years in prison. The Securities and Exchange Commission has also charged Bankman-Fried with fraud and Bankman-Fraud with Fried. Elsewhere in the crypto winterscape, in what can only be called an expected turn of events, the Donald J. Trump token started as a meme coin by Martin Shkreli, supposedly with the help of Baron Trump and another underage individual, has seen all of his liquidity pulled and the price come crashing down to earth. This is from a source called Protos.com. Pharma bro Shkreli, you may remember him, he bought a medicine company and then drove the price of the medicine involved way high. He tried desperately over a month to convince all of the cryptocurrency followers that Baron was responsible for the token. No one has been able to prove definitively that anyone in the Trump family was actually involved. His numerous social media accounts were either deleted or taken private during that period. The token made a huge splash in June when Pirate Wires, a media organization with ties to Peter Thiel's Founders Fund, reported that Barron was involved in what they called an official Trump token. That was false. However, after the flood of social media signaling from many close to the Trump camp that the token saw its price briefly rocket upward before plummeting once it was realizing that Martin Shkreli was the individual behind the coin. Allegations of Shkreli taking advantage of an 18-year-old and his 17-year-old friend began to swirl. Shkreli took to X, formerly Twitter, to deny the claim, saying he simply helped them set it up, get in contact with influencers, and then handed the private keys off. He said he was not offered any meaningful allocation of the tokens involved, that is to say, the DJT coin. Basically, all of the value, millions of dollars in Solana, another cryptocurrency, was taken out by an unknown party. Immediately, numerous accounts began to accuse Shkreli of taking the money. He's adamant he wasn't involved, and that only Baron or Baron's best friend would be able to take the liquidity and run. The DJT token is now down over 90% from all-time highs, currently trading for four thousandths of a dollar. Any ramifications, legal or otherwise, for anyone involved remain to be seen. And more winter, still more wintry, users of Kryptonator, an online digital wallet and cryptocurrency exchange, received an unpleasant surprise last weekend. The service was shuttered in a combined operation run by the FBI, the U.S. Internal Revenue Service, and German police. You got to call in German police? Things must be bad. Kryptonator allows people to store crypto coins remotely, transfer funds, and exchange cryptocurrencies for other types. It could be used for innocent purposes, says the register, though given it was happy to turn a blind eye to whoever was using it, it's not surprising it was allegedly utilized by questionable members of the internet community, hence its seizure by the feds. Ooh, crypto winner indeed. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First of all, some Olympics apologies. The Paris Olympic badminton champion An Si-young apologized to fellow South Korean athletes for stealing spotlight away from them with her recent criticism of the National Badminton Federation. Moments after winning the women's singles gold on Monday, An lashed out at her national team and the Badminton Korea Association for their poor handling of her knee injury and for outdated and inefficient operations. She even said she found it difficult to go on with the national team, though she later clarified she wasn't retiring from international play. Anne's critical comments and the BKA's subsequent denial of her charges took over the Olympic news cycle in South Korea this week. Anne took to Instagram to apologize to her peers for spoiling their moments. Quote, "I'm really sorry to athletes who are finally getting an opportunity to compete at the Olympics after so much hard work. My comments have washed away their moments to be celebrated and honored like a tsunami. I'd like to convey my sincerest apology to those athletes." Unquote. An Australian field hockey player competing at the Olympics has apologized after he was busted for purchasing cocaine in Paris earlier this week. Quote, "I would firstly like to apologize for what has occurred over the past 24 hours. I made a terrible mistake, and I take full responsibility for my actions," said Thomas Craig, addressing the media after his release from police custody, quote, "My actions are my own and by no way reflect the values of my family, my teammates, my friends, my sport, and the Australian Olympic team. I've embarrassed you all, and I'm truly sorry," unquote. 28-year-old Craig was arrested Tuesday night in Paris's 9th arrondissement, allegedly after buying cocaine from an underage dealer, according to the Sydney Morning Herald. Police said they had witnessed the transaction, according to ESPN, citing a statement from the prosecutor's office. Just prior to his arrest, Craig and his teammates, as well as members of the female field hockey team, had been celebrating after being knocked out of contention for a medal at the Olympics. As a result of his arrest, Craig has been removed from the Olympic Village, wasn't allowed to participate in the closing ceremony. But he's not going to, go on trial or anything. He was released from police custody with a warning. Will not face a fine or criminal penalty. Because it's the Olympics, and it's a movement. An Olympic cameraman disturbed a 5,000-meter run after wandering into the middle of the pack during a race, drawing criticism from the athletes. The incident happened in the second heat of the preliminary rounds as the runners entered the final four laps of the race, 5,000-meter race. On the first bend of the lap, the cameraman is seen standing on the track, but just as the pack approaches, he inexplicably walks toward the inside lane without looking, directly into the racer's path. The runners managed to swerve around him, but some gesticulated angrily, including the winner of the heat. "It's amateurish. That should not happen in the Olympics," said Norway's Jakob Ingebrigtsen. "I was just far out enough in front to see that something or other was happening. He has quite a large camera rig. He realized it quite quickly, but the damage is done. For some, the race is ruined," unquote. Ingebrigtsen. The Olympic Broadcasting Service released an official apology for the incident. OBS has apologized to World Athletics in Paris 2024 for the incident, which happened this morning, its statement said. The OBS team, they continued, will be extra diligent and take additional measures to avoid any interference by the OBS team with competing athletes, unquote. That's nice of them. Minister of National Defense in South Korea, Shin Won-sik, apologized this week over high-profile allegations that a Defense Intelligence Command official leaked agents' identities to Chinese hackers earlier this year. Quote, "I would like to apologize to the South Korean people for the public display of the alleged leak of military secrets and the bickering that ensued among senior intelligence officials," he said. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel appeared to apologize for Israeli security failures that allowed for the Hamas-led invasion of Israel on October 7th in an interview published this week in Time magazine. There's still time. He clarified that he planned to continue to safeguard the country and did not intend to step down from office. "Apologize?" Netanyahu asked when pressed on the issue by Time. Of course, I am sorry deeply that something like this happened," he said. "You always look back and you say, could we have done things that would have prevented it?" Unquote. BB. And Dateline England, the Sellafield nuclear facility has apologized after pleading guilty to criminal charges relating to a string of cybersecurity failings at Britain's most hazardous nuclear site, according to The Guardian. It admitted those failings could have threatened national security. Among the failings at the vast nuclear waste dump in Cumbria, was the discovery that 75% of its computer servers were vulnerable to cyber attacks. Information that could threaten national security was left exposed for 4 years, the nuclear watchdog revealed. Sellafield said it had been performing critical IT health checks that were not, in fact, being carried out. Sellafield is a sprawling rubbish dump for nuclear waste from weapons programs and decades of atomic power generation. Has about 11,000 employees and is part of the Nuclear Decommissioning Authority, a taxpayer-owned and funded org. The Guardian's investigation also revealed concerns about external contractors being able to plug memory sticks into Sellafield's system while unsupervised, and that its computer servers were deemed so insecure that the problem was nicknamed Voldemort after the Harry Potter villain because it was so sensitive and dangerous. Sellafield pleaded guilty to charges brought by the Office for Nuclear Regulation a couple months ago. The firm is now awaiting final sentencing. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, briefly, some news of our friend the atom. Radiation doses over four times legal levels were detected during the cleanup of suburban blocks in a neighborhood of Sydney, Australia. It's the site of a former uranium refinery that several state governments had repeatedly declared safe. Over 3,000 cubic meters of contaminated material now have been removed from waterfront blocks in the area, some shipped to a troubled nuclear waste storage facility in the United States, that according to the Sydney Morning Herald, the remainder trucked to a remote site in Western Australia. There's been a pattern of secrecy surrounding the site for much of the past century. Some former residents were lied to about potential health risks. Bags of contaminated dirt were left piled on the shore where children played on them, and barrels of radioactive material dug up in the 1990s and believed lost somewhere in Sydney were quietly being stored at a facility in a suburban neighborhood for 30 years. People on the site during the cleanup were exposed to the equivalent of 4.5 millisieverts. The limit for public exposure is 1 millisievert per year. The site of the former Portsmouth gaseous diffusion plant in Piketon, Ohio, is home to a significant number of radioactive cylinders posing ongoing environmental and health risks. The U.S. Department of Energy has repeatedly reported the hazardous conditions associated with these cylinder yards. They're required to go under regular inspections, including ultrasonic fitness testing. Most of the cylinders involved contain uranium hexafluoride, highly reactive with moisture, forming two compounds that are extremely corrosive and toxic. One of them can lead to severe corrosion of the cylinder walls. The environmental and health impacts of these compounds are severe. That compound can cause respiratory issues, skin burns, and eye damage. The other compound can lead to kidney damage and other serious health effects. And finally, Germany's ongoing hunt for a final repository for highly radioactive nuclear waste could last until the 2070s, a report warns. The country's environment ministry said the findings were outdated and the search may be completed earlier. The report by the Institute for Applied Ecology, commissioned by the country's Federal Office for the Safety of Nuclear Waste Management, said a decision on a location for a nuclear waste site could be expected in 2074 at the earliest, under ideal conditions, more than 40 years later than the original target, 2031, which the government gave up almost 2 years ago. Clean, cheap, safe too, safe to meter, our friend the atom. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, over these same radio stations, or on your audio device whenever you want it. And one hopes you'll be here with one. The email address for this program, a chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. That's ancient history, isn't it? And the playlist of the music here on, along with a lot of stuff to read and listen to and watch and luxuriate in, all at harryshearer.com. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego desk, Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. Like I needed help. The show comes to you from Century of Progress and originates through the facilities of WWNO, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.